Cliff Floyd is our MLB insider from the MLB Network. He's one of our favorites, and Cliff Floyd joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Hello, Cliff.
What's going on, JB? How you doing, man?
Busy day. Nothing. I was going to say nothing. It used to be that nothing happened during the World Series, but then they kind of changed it so that you can make an announcement on the off day. Quick question for you. What is Alex Anthopoulos' reputation in the industry?
I think it's one of those reputations that he would do anything in his power to make a team that's on the cusp of being a winner, a definite winner. So when you're there and you have a chance and you straddle the fence, can this team be there? Can I take advantage of a window of opportunity? And he sees it. He's going to go and get what he needs. We saw that. So I think his reputation is high amongst clubhouses. I think if you're a team that's in need of a general manager that's not only smart, but that can take the analytical part of it, which is where the game is going, and go out there and get guys to sort of achieve what you're searching to do, you need him. I've had a chance to meet him, had a chance to talk to him, very direct, baseball knowledge is through the roof. I don't know, JB. I can't understand, what would be in the way of having a guy like Alex run your squad and make sure you got the right players in the right situation to be successful. It must be a bad day for Gibby, the manager there, because this would be a heartbreak for me.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of the next question right now. I mean, the release from Edward Rogers, the chairman of the team, would indicate that the leaning initially, at least, is to maintain those people who are currently in leadership positions. But, Cliff, as we've made the point, when Alex Anthopoulos hired John Gibbons, there wasn't a person who thought it was a good idea. And point of fact, John Gibbons will tell you he wasn't certain it was a good idea to rehire him when Alex made that move. So I think there will be people who who will have some concern and be wondering about what it holds for John Gibbons. What about the players? What about the players, Cliff? We've already had people saying, well, that's it. David Price won't re-sign. Troy Tulowitzki, who admits that he was kind of taken aback by the trade and sort of just grudgingly started to trust people and started to like the situation in Toronto. Now he finds himself without the guy who traded for him. How do you think the players will react to this? And are the players these days pay much attention to what goes on with the general manager? Is it more likely the impact it will have on the manager that will occupy the attention of the players?
Yeah, I think it's more of the manager. 90% manager. It's only flipped, or it's only more on the general manager when a team does not do what players in the locker room think should be done in the offseason. That's when it becomes where the general manager, why you didn't go out and get XYZ? You knew we needed this. Okay, well, then it becomes, now you flip that. Now 10% manager, 9% GM, right, in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at Alex and go, well, you didn't do much this offseason. Yeah, maybe people question, bringing in, Martin, from a free agent standpoint when you need the pitching. Maybe we question this and that, but it worked out. It worked out. It ended up being exactly what you needed, and he had a philosophy in place, and he stuck to it. And when he felt it was time to make moves that was necessary, he went out and did it. And I think that's when the players go, I need you. We need you to be exactly what you've been. I know things looked a little dim at first. I know things looked dim when you had the window of opportunity and probably in the player's mindset and you didn't have enough pitching. But now you understand exactly what you need. You have the right guy in place. You know the guy is smart enough to go out there and make smart moves. I just don't know what happens in negotiations where, of course Toronto's going to, cover their butts and say, we offer him fire. You do. What else he wants to do? But I think Alex is going, look, I this is when you roll out the red carpet. I've done everything you've asked me to do, and it worked. This is when, as a GM standpoint, you get the red carpet, as a free agent would do from a player standpoint. So at the end of the day, what is it that needs to be done for us to have you back? It would probably be my conversation if I had the opportunity to bring a guy like Anthopoulos back, because he did exactly what I need to get my fan base exactly where they are heading to next year. That's what it's all about. The players are happy. The fan base was happy. Everybody appreciated the effort. And now it's like, to your point earlier, JB, what is David Price going to think now?
Mm-hmm.
Do I really want to mess with this turmoil and be a part of this, and who, not knowing who I'm going to talk to from a GM standpoint and all this? It just doesn't make, you know, good for negotiations with a star pitcher like David Price when it comes down to, you know what, this is what our organization is about, but you don't have a guy in place to go out there and have that conversation yet.
Who was the GM that you played for that, you know, that you were the closest to? Or who was the guy that, when I say close, the guy you had the best relationship with? And how did that work? Because ultimately, you know, the GM is the guy who's deciding whether or not you're going to be around. He's the guy who's ultimately deciding how much money you're going to make. Was there a GM that you really liked playing for? And how did that relationship come about?
Well, Dave Dombrowski comes to mind as one of the guys that, you know, when you talk about upfront and we'll give it to you straight, Dave Dombrowski was that guy. And I had him back, you know, when I played for the Marlins in 97. And, you know, we had our conversations. You know, not every one of them was great, but when things came up, because I was a free agent during that time, you know, Dave called and was like, listen, this is what we want to offer you. Now, I came back to him and says, Dave, you know, this is the first time I've ever dealt with this. You know, you got to go through my agent, of course. And I mean, you know, but I appreciate you giving me a shout. I'm definitely interested in signing and playing, you know, for you guys for a long period of time. But he was always up front, and he always put the team in position to be successful. And he understood that, you know what, I'm not going to throw good money at bad either. I'm not going to sit here and go, hey, you know, I think we have a chance to win. Let me go get X, Y, and Z. Oh, well, it didn't work out. No, he didn't do that. If it felt good and it looked good and it was a chance to win, Dave was going to go out and do what he needed to do. And that's why we won the World Series in 97. That's why he was able to move on to Detroit. I know they didn't win. I know he's been, you know, scrutinized for not maybe fixing bullpens and this and that. But when you look at what he's been able to do across the board, he has been everything and more of what you need from a general manager standpoint. And I think that's all you can ask for. So Dave Dombrowski can continuously have these great organizations because they know what's expected, and he knows how to deal with the expected. That's the biggest thing for me.
Cliff, I just want to shift focus a little bit. The World Series is on. The Kansas City Royals are up 2-0, and, you know, hands up if you had Johnny Cueto in the complete game pool.
My hands are down.
Yeah, mine are down too. Have we seen a team like the Royals in recent years? You know, I'm looking at the swing and miss numbers that everybody's raving about. They just don't. I mean, Cliff, every time they swing the bat, they hit the ball. I mean, that's just the way it is.
No, you're right. It's pretty crazy to sort of watch these guys go out and sort of be just, you know, sort of just like, you know what, so stubborn. I think that's what I'm looking for, JB. Just stubborn enough to know that, you know what, no matter what you throw, I don't care how hard you throw, I don't care what your, you know, what the name on the back of your jersey says, you're not going to beat me, you know, at the I throw hard and you're not supposed to hit me game. You're not. It's not going to happen. And when you look at Kansas City and you look at what they've been able to do against two of the bright young stars of the future in the game, it's basically saying, I'm going to make you make a mistake. I'm going to make you be in a position where you're flustered and you've had enough, and you go, I'm going to challenge you with this 97-mile-an-hour fastball, and oops, I make a mistake over the harder plate. And if you look at all these at-bats, what they've had, it's not so much the swing and miss, the JB. It's more of, look at the pitches that they're fouling off to get the pitch that they need to be successful. That's what I've been watching, going, how the heck are you fouling off 97? You've seen enough of it in our times back in Montreal with Pedro.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to hit Pedro's 97 by the neck.
Yeah.
You were swinging and missing that thing going, all right, well, this is a comfortable 0-for-4 because he's one of the best in the game. Jacob deGrom is one of the best in the game, and when he's throwing his 97-mile fastball up at your neck, you don't hit it. And the Kansas City Royals are fouling it off till he brings it either bell high, or he says, you know what, let me try to fool you with my secondary stuff, and I'm just going to take a lousy knock up the middle and just keep this thing moving.